Support for WILL comes from the Friends of WILL and Busey. With nearly 150 years of agribusiness experience, Busey offers solutions, resources, and expertise to support landowners. Busey, your dream, our promise.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 8th day of November. It's USDA Report Day. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, coming to you from the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention in Kansas City, Missouri. In this half hour, we'll talk about this morning's report and some of the surprising numbers that USDA released. In particular, an update of the number of bushels of corn in storage in China. That will take place with Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. And then Bill Northey, U.S. Undersecretary at the United States Department of Agriculture, will join us to talk about FSA, NRCS, and some of the things that USDA has been doing to try to streamline what's happening there and manage some of their cost in a more efficient and effective way. We'll wrap up our time together, too, with a look at the weather forecast. As always, Mike Tenura will be here from T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois, on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, supporting the next generation of farmers with the Fresh Roots Young and Beginning Farmer Program, offering lending assistance and learning incentives to equip today's newest farmers for a healthy start in their farming careers.
Of course, I'm in Kansas City, so the numbers we're giving now are as we go into the close, right around 115. December corn today at 373 and a quarter after the USDA report, up a penny. The March at 385, up one and a quarter. And the May up one and three quarters at 393 and a quarter. July at 399 and a quarter, a penny and three quarters higher. And December corn at $4.05 and a quarter of a cent, up 2.5 cents. Soybeans in the November contract down a quarter of a cent at 867 and a half at the close. January a half lower at 879, and the March at 891 and three quarters down a half, the May down a half at 905, and November beans of next year at $9.30 and three quarters of a cent, a penny and a quarter higher for the day. Bean oil futures down 18 cents at 2802, the bean meal at 305.80 down 210, and wheat futures as they went to the close, December contract at 507 and a half down two and three quarters, and July at 539 and a quarter, 2.5 lower, that of course for the soft red. The hard red July down a penny and a quarter at $5.44. Live cattle futures in Chicago at the close, and these are actually settlement prices, 116.55, up 45 cents. February at 119.87 and a half, 27 and a half cents higher. And the feeder cattle at 150.17 and a half, down 25 cents. January there at 146.27 and a half, up 45. And lean hogs at $55.62 and a half cents, a dime higher on the afternoon. Outside markets show crude oil, 88 cents lower at $60.79. Again, these are about quarter after the hour of 1 o'clock, so roughly an hour ago. December contract at $1.26.09, 7 tenths of a cent lower. Heating oil or diesel fuel down 63 and 3 tenths at 217 and 3 tenths. And gasoline on the RBOB at $1.65, 3 and 3 tenths of a cent higher. Natural gas at 356 and a tenth, 6 tenths of a cent higher. The Dow at that time about 29 points higher, roughly unchanged, 26,211. The dollar up 0.55 at 96.36, and the gold futures at $1,225.70, around $3 lower for the day. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area as it comes from the National Weather Service for tonight. A slight chance of rain, that before 8, and then rain and snow likely between 8 and 1. Snow after that, a low of 32 tonight, northeast winds at about 5, turning light and variable overnight. Chance of precipitation, 80%. New snow possible, 1 to 2 inches. Rain tomorrow before 11 a.m., then a chance of rain between 11 and 5, and a slight chance of rain after 5, a high of just 38 degrees for the day on Friday. West-northwest wind at 5 to 14, gusting to 22, chance of rainfall, 80%.
Support for agricultural weather on WILL comes from the Friends of WILL and from Busey. With nearly 150 years of agribusiness experience, Busey offers solutions, resources, and expertise to support landowners. Busey, your dream, our promise.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Thursday afternoon. Do buy those tickets for the Farm Assets Conference. That's coming up the 20th day of November. After being here in Kansas City at the NAFB for a couple of days, I'm now more convinced than ever that the way producers are going to market their crops is going to change dramatically over the next 5 years. And that's the first thing we're going to take up at the conference. If you haven't signed up yet, now's the time. Don't waste it. Pick up the phone, dial 800-898-1068, or go online to farmassetsconference.com, willag.org. That's farmassetsconference.com or willag.org. Tickets are just $40. That's the 20th day of November. You can find all the details online there. At either place, again, you can dial in at 800-898, and I gave you 68. It's actually 1065. That's 800-898-1065. Dan Zwicker is now here. Hey, Dan, out of Waco, Texas. Dan, good afternoon to you. Thanks for being with us. I'm going to go through some numbers really quickly from the USDA reports, and then we can talk about what this means to the marketplace. So USDA in its crop production report lowered total production by about 152 million bushels for corn, and the yield was down 1.8 bushels to the acre. Production for soybeans also lowered, down 90 million bushels, and I'm pretty certain that I saw this note that the bulk of that came out of reductions in yields for Illinois and Iowa, although a yield at 52.1 bushels to the acre is down one bushel from the October estimate. And this is what that means for carryout. Corn carryout now at 1.736 billion bushels with a midpoint of $3.60 on the cash price. Soybean at 955 million bushels. That's up 70 million bushels. Midpoint at $8.60. I'll get to the corn in just a second because there's some other things to talk about there. You have long said that whether we're at 955 or at 870 million bushels, that it doesn't make much difference. The marketplace reacted some to these numbers in Chicago, and you and I are talking at about 12:43 today. What did you make as an assessment of the total set of numbers that came out from USDA?
Well, I mean, the chart picture has been telling you that the crop probably wasn't as big as what USDA said it was, because we've been basically in a sideways to higher trend basically since middle part of September when we made our lows in both in corn and in soybean when you look at the futures. So, I mean, we put all of the bearishness, I think, in the marketplace there during September when all of the China trade news was, you know, at the maximum bearishness that we could see. And then, of course, the USDA had some of the biggest, loftiest numbers that you could see. So basically, you know, it just verifies why the market has been trending sideways to higher since the middle of September, that the underlying fundamental structure that's reflected in price recognize the fact that USDA was too high on their numbers, and that's why the overall trend has been sideways to higher since mid-September. So, and then of course the revisions that we saw in China as far as corn stocks go. Again, I've always viewed grain stocks reports or anything like that as basically old news, because the market has already been working that. I mean, we have to understand that while maybe something may not be public, but the factors of those events are actually being worked into price. And I think the fact that USDA comes out and says that the China corn stocks are double what they thought they were helps explain why the corn market has been so sluggish when you have a generally friendly balance sheet. And I think so. I think today's report basically on the crop report confirms the fact that the market already knew that USDA was too high on the yield. So it kind of verifies that USDA had the biggest numbers plugged into the marketplace back in August, September. And then all of the bearishness that we had from the China trade deal, it couldn't have got any more bearish. And the market's been trending sideways to higher. And now the markets did start out lower here after those, or it moved lower after USDA announced those big carryover changes in corn. But as we're speaking here, we still have a half hour or so to go before the close. But the corn market now has come back and is trading 2 to 2.5 cents higher. And when I'm looking at the December corn futures chart, it's holding nicely inside that sideways to higher uptrending channel. And actually, I think if we can close higher here today, we might even get a little buy signaling here to give it a little more push to the upside.
Yeah, just so that folks who haven't actually heard this yet, and you mentioned China and the changes that USDA made, on the top of the WASDE report, they put a disclaimer or a warning that said, hey, look, we looked at the NBS, and I think that stands for National Bureau of Statistics, I can't quite recall, from China, and now believe what they're telling us and the updates I think the Chinese made. And in bushels, that increased the number of bushels in storage and roughly speaking, doubled it, but increased it to 5.8 billion bushels, and that'll give them something over 10 or 11 or 12 billion bushels in storage. And by the way, that's about the size of our crop. We're around 14.6 from this USDA number. So those are some of the numbers have updated. You said, you know, this explains why when we're at 1.8 billion bushels, we're not really seeing, which it seems to be a fairly competent or not quite tight, but a nice carry out for the United States, that we're not seeing the marketplace higher than it is. That explains some of that. Soybeans added 70 million bushels. That's because export demand went down. And they lost 90 million bushels in production as well. What do you see for that marketplace? Does it have downside potential left in it? And will it cap any upside move in the corn?
Well, I think it will, because, I mean, it's just going to, I mean, when you're talking about a billion bushel carryover in soybeans, but like I've said for the last couple of months, I'm not too sure there's any difference between 800 or 850 or 950 or a billion, whatever it is, it's just way too much. And beans are trying to, find a price level that it does bring in some export demand. I mean, our sales weren't bad today. They at least were within trade expectations. But, you know, this is the time of year you should be selling twice as many beans as what we're selling. The same way with corn. We should be selling twice as many bushels than we're selling because this is the time of year exporters come in and start, building an inventory. I think, what it says longer term is that, this is, wheat has been at a billion bushels for several years already. And that's why, a lot of people has moved over into soybean acres, because there was no profit in wheat. So now we've got the bean production up to the point that now there's not going to be much money in planting soybeans. So eventually the market will probably have people planting more corn acres, and that'll get to the point where there's no profit in corn acres. So, I mean, it just looks to me we're waiting now for a catastrophic drought of some kind to come along and change the supply picture of all of these commodities. I mean, it's like I said, corn doesn't look bad at 1.7, but it's probably too low. It's probably going to go higher as time goes on, even if USDA has to bring the production number down. Our only hope here is to maybe see a big drop in the dollar, which I think there's reason to believe that might come, especially if the Fed doesn't raise interest rates, and eventually that's going to force the Fed to raise interest rates. So I do think we're in a rising interest rate market. And I think the weaker dollar is going to be one of these things that once a trend starts, it's, raising interest rates, it's not high enough to put support underneath the dollar. And we could get ourselves into a pretty good inflationary surge in here at some point in time. And that could be somewhat friendly to commodities. And that would be somewhat bearish probably to equities. But We'll have to see how things sort itself out here over the next 2 to 3 months. But I have a sneaky feeling there's a lot of different positioning, squaring going on between now and the end of the year here.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it a lot.
Very well, Todd.
That, of course, is Dan Zwicker. He's with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. We're here at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention in Kansas City. Bill Northey is here. He's an undersecretary at the United States Department of Agriculture. Mr. Northey, thanks so much for being with us. Let's talk about a couple of different things that you are involved with in the United States Department of Agriculture. The first one, I know producers are wanting to know how to sign up, some of them still, for the Market Facilitation Program payments, or the MFP. And it's possible to do that in many ways. Farmers.gov is one of those places, or they can simply go online.
They can. So go online to farmers.gov, and there'll be information about signing up there. Typically, producers will have needed to, they can print out a form and be able to fill out that form, walk into an office, and hand it to somebody. But if they want to actually do full sign-up on farmers.gov, that's possible as well. But you've had to develop an authentication process that does require a trip to the office. Some hundred producers already have, and I think we have several hundred producers that have completed that process of signing up for Market Facilitation Program online. And while there, you can look at some other disaster tools. If you've had some kind of a disaster, maybe you lost livestock in a storm or other kinds of things, information is online for that. And we look forward in the future, and our goal had been by the end of this year. It probably has slipped a little bit because of these other programs we put into place, to be able to have our loan-making process, FSA, also available online. So producers that have loans can go and check payments, but producers that would like to apply for loans could be able to go online and do that. Not currently available, but that's a coming attraction, I guess.
So why the push for farmers.gov? It's easy to use it, and it's got a simple name, but why this push from the USDA?
Well, we want to make it easy for producers to be able to access the information however they would like it, and access some of the forms and tools. We have offices in most counties in the country, certainly most of our agricultural counties, over 2,000 counties out there. We intend for those offices to all still be there. We have a lot of producers that would never go online to be able to do that, but we do have producers that like to be able to do that, like to be able to maybe in the future fill out an acreage report online, provide that information. Maybe they do it from their tractor as they start the next field and do it one field at a time and be able to do that. That's not currently available. It takes a lot of software work to be able to make that happen, but it's something that we need to move towards to be more accessible for our producers out there of all ages, of all interests, and all, I guess, ability to be able to get online and be able to access these tools.
You've been charged by the Secretary and the Trump administration with streamlining with three different parts of the USDA organization. Can you tell me about that process and what you're looking forward to?
Yeah, Secretary Perdue had the vision of putting NRCS, our conservation programs, FSA, our farm programs, and RMA, our crop insurance programs, those kind of three farmer-facing parts of USDA, all in one mission area. They were in two different mission areas before. And bringing those together mean when we talk IT systems, we talk about that across the mission area. So we right now have very different computer alignments in FSA and NRCS. So it's hard for our folks in the field to be able to get information from the other agency. We'd love to be able to bring that together. We're actually doing some of our back office kind of accounting and human resources and other kinds of activities together as well. So it can add some efficiency as well, some continuity across those three organizations. Really, for a producer's impact, I hope they just see a very efficient office and a few less times where they have to go out and fill out the same form at one office versus the other. And so we just want to be able to add some efficiencies. For our staff, we hope it frees them up to be able to spend more time with our customers rather than moving paperwork around and chasing down where are we at on renting an office and where's our vehicle and some of those kinds of things.
Clearly, there will be some upfront cost. Do you have an idea of what the savings might be over time from combining these IT efficiencies?
You know, we spend a lot of money on IT across the system. Obviously, we have 2,000 offices in FSA and 2,000 offices in NRCS. And, of course, our risk management agency is a heavy IT user as well. You've got to be able to address a problem in each of those areas. You've got to have internet access in each area. A lot of hardware, a lot of software. You've got a lot of foreign governments or private folks that like to be able to break into our system, so you have security pieces as well. So it's all integrated. We don't have good numbers about exactly what kinds of savings bringing this together, but we're able to bring some stuff together where we're able to use some of those savings to be able to address some of the new programming. So it is literally hundreds of millions of dollars that are spent on IT across just our part of USJ, but it's essential to everybody in a county office that they have good IT access or they can't be able to deliver a program to a producer across the counter.
What direction, if any, has the Secretary given you about the President's push to cut 5% out of budgets?
Certainly always looking at where we can be the most efficient. As the Secretary's mantra is, and he constantly pushes it, we're going to be the most efficient, we're going to be the most effective, and the most customer-oriented part of the federal government. And within USDA, our charge in these three agencies, as we deal with producers, is absolutely to do that. So one of the things that we've done is we replace some folks that have retired out in our offices. We have a workload analysis trying to understand where are those worst holes in those 2,000 offices out there. We're going to put another 200 people out there. Where are the 200 hardest hit places? Every place could use some more staff. But some of them are in a tougher place than others. So we're most efficient if we can get those people to the most needed places. We're also most effective, and we're also certainly the most customer-oriented. So it's a significant effort to do workload analysis in each of those offices. But it's tough to understand the difference between, you know, a conservation program in Arizona and one in Maine, and how much time it takes. But we're able to get to some of those pieces to figure out how we can do those better.
Well, congratulations on being upgraded to HR and IT and all the things that come along with those two areas. That sounds like a tough job.
You know, it is a challenge, but we have great people, and the stuff that we do matters. I really appreciate having an office full of an awful lot of folks that have ag roots as well. Many of them started in a county office someplace. A lot of them have farm families out there, and so we're able to talk how harvest is going in Missouri in Indiana and in Florida and in Mississippi and in California with different folks. So obviously as well in Illinois, Todd, we have some great folks from Illinois in our office, but it's a wonderful country, great folks at USDA, and it's certainly my honor and pleasure to be able to work with them.
Thank you so much, Undersecretary.
Thank you, Todd. Appreciate it.
Bill Northey is an Undersecretary of the United States Department of Agriculture, joined us here at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting.
It's National Harvey Wallbanger Day. It's also St. Kestris, Patron of Cattle Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1789, Elijah Craig, according to some historians, distilled the first bourbon whiskey from corn in Bourbon County, Kentucky. What's not in dispute is that Craig founded a distillery as well as building Kentucky's first cloth manufacturing mill, its first paper mill, and its first mill for manufacturing rope from hemp. In 1880, Edwin Drake died, an American driller. He discovered the first productive oil well near Titusville, Pennsylvania, that launched the modern U.S. petroleum industry. He struck oil at a depth of 69 feet on August 27th of 1859. Drake used an old steam engine to power the drill. Ironically, Drake died in poverty after years of crippling illnesses. In 1910, a patent for the first electric insect zapper was issued to William H. Frost of Spokane, Washington. The invention used a number of electronically charged parallel wires. In 1923, Jack Colby was born. An American electrical engineer, he invented the first integrated circuit, for which he shared the 2000 Nobel Prize in Physics. And in 1974, London's famous flower and vegetable market moved from Covent Gardens. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention in Kansas City, Missouri. We're now joined by Mike Tenora. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Mike, thanks so much for being with us. Here in Kansas City, it's going to get cold and snow today. I'm wondering if this is going to transfer across the whole of the Corn Belt or not.
It will move across the southern half of the Corn Belt, but it's a relatively minor system, so we are not looking for any large impacts from this event. It will basically be more of a nuisance than anything to anybody who is still planting wheat or harvesting corn and soybeans. Once we move beyond the next 24 hours, though, it does dry out a lot. There's no major rain or snow events on the horizon for the following 10 days after that, so it looks pretty dry here for a while. As you noted, it will be fairly cold for about a week, but we do start to warm back up toward normal levels once we get into Wednesday and Thursday of next week.
And what do you see for crop harvesting conditions as producers try to make that last push?
No big problems. It'll be dry for a while, and it will be a bit cold here over the next week. But again, once we get beyond the coldness, it does warm up, so temperatures more toward normal for this time of the year, with highs in the 40s and 50s, maybe even a few 60s out in the plains, and no rain and no snow. So it's looking pretty ideal once we get beyond the next 24 or 30 hours or so.
And in South America, what do weather conditions look like there?
Well, it's the opposite there. Quite a bit of rain is going to fall in Argentina, Brazil, and Paraguay over the next 10 to 14 days. The rain event that begins tomorrow night and ends on Monday is going to wipe out all of the dryness and drought concerns that we have for Argentina. Anywhere from 1.5 to 3.5 inches of rain is on the way. And that's a lot of rain for November, probably about half of their normal for the entire month, maybe even closer to 75% of normal. So we had that large drought that developed last December, January, and February, has essentially continued on and off for much of this year, but it has been waning over the last few weeks and few months, and is going to finally get its killing blow here, it looks like, this weekend with all this rain coming up.
And from South America, a move to the Eastern European Union, because they've been dry. We've been worried about that. Does it remain that way?
Well, it's going to stay that way for a while. There's a large area of upper-level high pressure across the Eastern EU, Ukraine, and Russia that encompasses much of the winter wheat production region. And because of that, it's going to stay pretty dry and pretty mild for another 10 to 14 days. They're already under an agricultural drought due to a lack of rain over the last 90 days across much of each of those regions. And that's going to continue through the month of November. None of this is going to become a large issue unless it doesn't rain much over the next 4, 5, 6 months. That would create a 1988 type situation where it was dry in the fall, dry in the winter, dry in the spring, and then all of a sudden you have a major drought. Again, it's going to take a lot to get to that point, but the first piece of that puzzle is in place.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate it.
You're welcome. We'll talk to you next week.
Mm-hmm. That, of course, is Mike Tenura. He is with T-Storm Weather in Chicago. I'm Todd Gleason.